This podcast is recorded on traditional lands that were never ceded. Melbourne, also known as Naam, is part of the Kulin Nation, which is a collective of five Aboriginal clans: Wurundjeri, Bunwurrung, Wathaurong, Tungurung, and Jajawurrung. This episode was recorded in the lead-up to a referendum in Australia. The referendum asks the Australian population if an Indigenous voice to Parliament should be enshrined in our constitution, giving Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people a constitutional voice, an advisory voice that cannot be removed by any political party. Both Damien and I are advocating for a yes vote in this referendum. Why? Because we believe in a fair, equitable and safe society. We believe that everyone deserves a voice, especially those people whose land we live on. A yes vote means a shared and prosperous future for our nation. A yes vote propels us forward. A no vote holds us back. A yes vote takes the opportunity for all of us to walk together to do something, just one thing, to break the cycle of poverty, disadvantage, and disempowerment for the Indigenous people of Australia. A yes vote delivers recognition, hope, and healing. How are you, Damien?
Jim, you and I here in Melbourne, we're in this sort of beautiful building in the middle of the city. The sun's out, it's, spring is booming. What a great time to be in Melbourne.
I know. September is almost Mediterranean.
Yeah, it is Mediterranean. And we've had a cheeky glass of wine earlier on, just as a lead into the podcast. Can we say that?
We did. I think we can. But we've already said it.
We've already said it.
Yeah, it's Mediterranean in Melbourne this time of year, and it's really beautiful. I know a lot of our listeners listen in from overseas. Melbourne spring is, I think, Melbourne comes alive in spring, really. It's our time in spring, don't you think?
It's always that transition between seasons. You know, we feel like we've worked hard through winter to get to the end of it. And if you're one of those unlucky people that haven't had a chance to go overseas. Now you're going overseas on Sunday. We can probably get into it. How are you feeling about that?
Oh, I'm excited. You know, I switched off my laptop. I spent the morning catching up with my team, actually, and the day before as well, catching up with our various teams across a range of sort of projects that we're working on, and just making sure everyone has what they need and all of that. It's always hard, you know, as the business owner, you've got to kind of just make sure everyone has what they need, really, and they feel supported and safe and okay. It also makes me feel supported, safe and okay to know that all that's in line. But I did that over the last few days, and I feel really, we've got an amazing group of people, and my partners are fantastic, so yeah, that's really great. So I switched off at around midday today and eased into Friday afternoon with you, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Now I've got the weekend to pack.
Have you got that holiday buzz? You know, when you can start to celebrate inside, you get excited like a little kid going, okay, now I can start to let go.
It's really funny, isn't it? Because I'm going to Athens and a couple of Greek islands and Thessaloniki, which is in the north of Greece. I'm not going to something that feels foreign to me. I just feel like I'm going to a second place that I call home. Even though I'm a Melbournian, I'm Australian, I'm born here. And I was chatting about this with my wife recently. You know, I feel grateful, and I'm interested in how you feel as a child of migrants. I feel grateful that there are two parts of me. I belong to two places, and I feel deeply rooted in both those places. In the place that I was born, this beautiful country of ours, Australia, and the place where my ancestors were born and lived their lives. And so it does feel like a break. It also does feel like reconnecting and with another part of my home, my family, and also doing a hell of a lot of research and discovery for my work brain as well. So there's all of those things that carry on. I'm interested in how you feel about that sense of duality and belonging.
Yeah, look, I mean, you probably put it well. I mean, being also a child of migrants, you know, we live between these two worlds. I think in the 80s and 90s, it was always a bit of a challenge around identity and who are we? You know, where are we from? And I love the fact that you're starting to integrate those two worlds and celebrate and own those two worlds. Mm. I can say I've always, you know, we've had such a strong background, you know, back in Croatia, and we've got some beautiful, rich, deep roots. But there's always been that sort of sense of being caught between two worlds when you're living in Melbourne. But I think it's probably only recently that I'm really starting to embrace and celebrate that those two worlds can exist, and they're part of who we are, and we're also people of the world. Yeah, we're not just kind of one dimension, are we?
That's right. That's right. We're not. We're talking about identity, not patriotism here.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that is fluid. Yeah. We're talking about a fluid sense of identity and belonging. Absolutely. How do you do that? How do you come into that identity as you approach your 40s? Deep into your 40, our 40s.
Deep.
Damien and I are exactly the same age, well into our 40s and almost leaving them soon. How do you realize that duality and identity in yourself? Have you done anything? Are there any rituals that you embark on? I'm really fascinated around that topic.
It's, you know, Jim, it's a great question. I kind of think the word pilgrimage always comes up. So, you know, when you go back home to, or, you know, you go back to the birthplace of your ancestors, and you do that pilgrimage and you connect with your family, you connect with the land. I remember feeling when I did an earlier pilgrimage probably 20-odd years ago, and I remember back in 06 just sitting in my late father's, you know, younger brother's home, and the place of his birth, you could actually feel the wind and the air coming down from the top of the mountain. And that was a sense of reconnection, and that was a part of my ritual and a pilgrimage, for want of a better term. And I think that's probably something you're also in some parts embarking on at some level, I guess. Is that?
Yeah, very true. Yeah, absolutely, very true. I'm going to the place of my mother's birth in Thessaloniki in the north of Greece. My mother passed away a couple of years ago, in late 2021. It hasn't been 2 years yet. And yeah, that for me is a sense of, I can't say it's closure, but it is part of this sort of ever-expanding grieving process that lasts a lifetime, really, you know, when you lose a family member or a parent. So I think that sense of pilgrimage, and I love what you just said, walking on the lands and, you know, just planting your feet on the ground feels, there's a nice sense of connection there. I've seen people take their shoes off on stage just to feel present.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And just doing that sort of those little things, putting your arm around your child, being with your partner, being with a friend and family, that's what's better than that, really, you know?
Mate, you said something the other day, you know, when we do leadership work, we invite leaders to share their origin story. These are my people. This is where I come from. And that almost feels like that same sense of, this is my people, this is where I come from, and putting your feet on that land is such a beautiful way to celebrate your origin story, isn't it? And you can't do it in your head. You actually have to go there and just be in the air, in the space, in the sea, and whatever that, with those family members.
Yeah, without a doubt. 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be great. We fly out on Sunday, and we're deeply in the process of, you know, timetabling what time we leave and get to the airport and all that, and how much shit we put in suitcases and all that.
Who's winning the debate?
You're not gonna. I don't win anything at home, so that'll be good. So yeah, it's only awesome. A short 3 to 4 week trip, 3 week trip. So that'll be great. And I must say, the last week for you and I actually has been, we've certainly experienced the ripple effect of having our friend Jess in on the last episode, and that for me has been, I'm not sure about you, but that I've been reflecting a lot on our conversation with Jess Kelly, and that has really left me with poignant reminder of being present and really savoring moments of joy and adversity with equal sense of presence and gravitas, not dismissing either, and not even flippantly forgetting moments of joy, or even flippantly treating adversity as something that you have to complain about, but being truly present in them. I'd love to just quickly reflect on our last conversation with Jess. I thought it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was quite interesting leaving that sort of dialogue piece. I mean, what was the first thing you felt when she left that space? What sort of came up for you immediately?
That's a great question, actually. What did I feel? When we stopped recording, I just wanted to hug Jess. You know, I think what we had created, the three of us, and this is, I think, evident in great leadership environments, is to create a place that comes from a place of love, and the dialogue comes from a place of love, and the environment is safe, but also conducive to being courageous and brave, just as much as it being safe. So I really felt that, and you and I always have these conversations, yet it was lovely to have a third person take an active part in that. And my instant reaction was I just wanted to hug Jess. It was awesome.
Yeah. It was.
What about you?
She brought a pure presence into the conversation. She was really engaged and connected, and it sort of called me out on when I'm not feeling present, or I'm too distracted, or I'm caught up in content, or I'm caught up in noise or tech, or the chaos that's going on in the outside world. And man, I think it's such a healing thing for someone like Jess to turn up and, I mean, you know, we all gave each other that space. And so when you have that, I guess I'm almost lost for words, but when I reflect on what it felt like as an experience, it felt connected.
Oh, without a doubt. I agree. And those conversations really shouldn't just exist in the vacuum of a podcast studio just because we have an hour to talk about them and you've even been invited to talk about that thing, right, in that frame. Those conversations should be present in every boardroom, in every ELT meeting, in every difficult conversation within an organisation. And, you know, I think Jess was a really, really great example of bringing that, because she's like that in real life.
Yeah, she certainly brought that energy in them.
Not that this isn't real life.
You know, she's written some great articles and posts about the conversation, and I think it's relevant to the work that you and I do. But there was presence, there was connected dialogue. The other top theme that I really got out of last week's podcast was this authentic sense of meaning. This actually matters, not from aggression, ego, grandstanding, or trying to bully people into these positions. It was actually just a meaningful position. This actually really matters. I really give a shit about this stuff, and I'm willing to go all the way. And there's such a beautiful fuel that she brought into that energy. It's like a deeper connection to this actually matters. This really matters.
Yeah, agreed. And there was a moment in our conversation last week where, you know, just mentioned that it was easy for them to take that business and go another path. That would have been an easy solution. And I would have been cashed up. But that didn't really connect with her sense of purpose and the work she's actually here to do, right? And they've actually taken a path where that really deeply connects to her and her partner's sense of purpose around social and affordable housing and really servicing that, the need for sustainable, affordable homes. And that for them is deeply rooted in their sense of purpose, but also their sense of identity. And that really came through for me. And I found that immensely inspiring in not wasting time, acknowledging that we're only here for a finite amount of time. Don't chase things that really are meaningless. Actually tap into that source within us that really acts as a compass towards the things that light us up and force us to make that change or move us towards making that change that we want to see in the world.
Jim, you know, seeing someone light up about their place in the world, that doesn't have to be their profession. It could be something outside of their profession. It could be something beyond their work. It doesn't necessarily just have to be work. But certainly in the space that you and I play, which is, purpose-led organisations and leaders, what are brands other than people absolutely giving a shit about what matters? I mean, let's be honest. Like, isn't it so inspiring and engaging to hear people talk about something that really, really resonates with their core? It's something that matters. It's something that they want to bring into the world. And when you feel that, you actually get your cup filled. When you don't fill that and there's a disconnection or a misalignment, it almost gouges you out. Does that make sense? It actually just drains you. It drains the energy out of your body.
Yeah, I agree. And there's so many people say but don't do.
Yes.
So many people, we talked about this in the last episode, where they use the right words and they tick the right boxes. You know, excellent sheep, I believe, Jess was a great example of someone who says and does with equal measure. I want to read you something.
Go for it.
Because I'm holding it in front of me, a book, and I've got a paragraph highlighted. I'm reading this wonderful book by Martin Luther King Jr. It's called The Gift of Love. In future episodes, we'll talk about why I'm reading it. But I've highlighted this passage, and I was actually looking for a reason to bring it up today. This is the reason, right?
Go for it.
One of the great tragedies of life is that people seldom bridge the gulf between practice and profession, between doing and saying. A persistent schizophrenia leaves so many of us tragically divided against ourselves. On the one hand, we proudly profess certain sublime and noble principles, but on the other hand, we sadly practice the very antithesis of those principles. How often are our lives characterized by a high blood pressure of creeds and an anemia of deeds?
Yeah, we're almost running away from ourselves.
Absolutely. Between,
you know, who we are and what we believe and what we're doing. It's almost that complete disconnect. And I
agreed.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful, man. How did you, that's a book you've been reading lately. Talk to us about that.
Oh, it's just, look, I'm halfway through it. It's, you know me, I love reading about the civil rights, and I've read all of James Baldwin, I read a little bit of Martin Luther King and Angela Davis and a whole bunch of others in that era. So I love that. I love reading about people that have risen from oppression in a good way. And I mentioned in our last episode, Senator John Lewis, who's a real inspiration as well, who I've read a lot about him as well. There's a great documentary on one of the streaming services called Good Trouble, which is, and I picked this up based after watching a video of another future guest who we're hoping to have on the show. And he had mentioned it, so it created a bridge between the connective zaps that happen up in my brain, and I'm halfway through the book. So that's why I'm reading it. It deeply connects with me, because this person in particular, this amazing leader whose life was cut short, not only rattled the cage, not only got into good trouble, but he did it for no other reason. He didn't do it for political reasons. He didn't do it for any social status. He did it and he came from a place of love. He just wanted to see the world become better, do better. And he painted a very clear picture of what better looked like. And I find that really inspiring.
Jim, you often talk about good trouble. Do you want to tell us about that? Like, you know, just bring that to life for us. What do you, you know, when you talk about good trouble, what is that? What does that feel like, or what does it mean?
Yeah, good trouble is a term coined, well, I first heard it in a speech by Senator John Lewis, US Senator, passed away a couple of years ago. He used it in his speeches. If we want to see change in the world, like real change, positive change in boardrooms, in organizations, in communities, we have to get into good trouble. And he called it necessary trouble. Good trouble is necessary. We have to do it. You know, this man was... He reached the top of, almost the top of the US political pyramid, if it is a pyramid. US President Barack Obama sent him a note when he was inaugurated, and the note simply read, "It's because of you, John. Thank you." People like John Lewis rattled cages when others were afraid to rattle them. They pushed against what society said we should be and do, and change the world for the better. And that's good trouble. They walked to their own beat. He was arrested more than 48 times in his life, right? And still so widely respected and remarkable human being. Couldn't walk down the street without people coming up to him, thanking him for the change he had made in their lives, especially African American population, but also advocated for women's rights and all sorts of underrepresented communities in the USA. Truly, truly inspiring man. Good trouble is about pushing against the grain, challenging the culture, and ensuring that you do it from a place of love.
Okay, so this is this is such an important topic to kind of talk about. When I think about like John Lewis and the people you refer to, and they're all these like amazing change agents, but what's quite different is these days we can get so locked into this polarity, sort of dehumanization or demonization of the other. But when you think about John Lewis and Martin Luther King, they were able to hold that polarity with a place of compassion and love. Mm. They weren't trying to, you know, make the other person lesser than. And I guess whether it's a tech world we live in, it's so easy to get into these deep polarizing positions. I'm either this or that, or I'm this or that. And that's not what these people did they?
Not at all. And look, I have no idea how you stay that balanced. And I have no idea how you find that harmony, because we're human. We're emotional creatures, and we sway left and right, up and down and around. I have no idea, but what I enjoy doing is learning how these people have found this harmony. And in some instances, especially for James Baldwin, there's an anger there,
yeah. Right?
And it's a healthy anger to see positive change. But even that comes from a place of love, you know. So I'm not sure how you find that balance and then sustain it. Like, fucking stay there. That's hard, right? To find that balance between those two extremes. I mean, what's your take on that?
You know, Jim, I'm probably one of the question I've always had in my brain for like nearly two odd decades is, you know, what is that role of the change agent? How do we bring others on board? How do we bring others with differing views and opinions? How do we talk to people that we don't agree with? But how do we do it in a way that doesn't dehumanize and make the other lesser than? Because that's easy shit to do. You can do that. I mean, get onto Twitter. Mm. We don't need more polarity. We don't need more dichotomy. We actually don't need more dogma across the spectrum, across the continuum. What we need is these change agents like John Lewis and Martin Luther King and others that are kicking around the universe at the moment that actually know how to hold hard spaces without reverting to sort of these harsh positions, because the harsh position is easy. The harsh position is every person. The real work of change is that I can sit in a room full of people that I've got diametrically opposite views, but I can actually hold that space and I make that space okay for them and for me. That's actually the work. I don't know if there's any other work, because otherwise we're just going to become a lot of sheep that are in one position or the other. We don't need more of that right now. We've got some massive issues that we're trying to get our head around. So how do we bring people on board that journey? And people that we don't agree with, people that have different backgrounds and opinions from us. How do we sit in those spaces? And I think that's the ultimate role of the change agent. And you're not going to go there without a healthy level of compassion for yourself and others. Mm. And that's what the world needs more of. And I can't be any clearer than that. And I can argue with people till the cows come home. But that's the role of the change agent. And we're all got a part to play in that.
Yeah. And that's good leadership, isn't it? That's the art of good leadership, is to be able to sit in a room and balance that duality.
I can disagree with you. I don't have to hate you.
Mm.
Yeah. I can think that your views are nothing like what I believe in, but I don't have to make you lesser than. Because my work in this world is to bring as many people together along on a journey, and that's what we're here for. And we're facing some pretty big questions at the moment across every part of the world, and I think that's a responsibility that we all have. I mean, I don't know, what do you think, like in terms of that dialogue and that role we have? Because, you know, I mean, especially the work you do across culture, the work you do across so many different industries, we're going to come up against people that we have almost nothing in common. What do? Do we judge them? Do we shut them down? Do we make them lesser than? Or do we hold the space for them? And we can still have our core principles. We can still have the things that matter most to us. And that's actually okay. But how do we hold more of those spaces, Jim? Because it's so easy to get into the either or, the black and white, the dogma.
Mm.
And the world does not need more of that right now.
No, not at all. And absolutely not. how do we... It's very personal, isn't it? It takes good leadership, and at an organizational level, at a community level, even, and then at a societal level, we need to nurture good leadership in all of us. And it's not, leadership is a choice. Good leadership is a choice. It's not a mountain you climb. It's not a job title. It's an activity, right? It's a mindset. It's a framework and scaffolding for thinking and behaving. And I believe that we don't get taught that. You and I were taught that Captain Cook discovered Australia. We grew up in a narrative that shut our identities down. You know, we grew up in a community that almost shamed us out of our own identities, cultural identities. And that's not good leadership, right? That's in the people and the systems that supported that. You know, I think I've often told you that in the first few weeks of primary school, senior primary school teacher came up to my mum for, you know, 4 years landing in Australia. So I'm a young child, 5 years maybe, landing in Australia with a young child, and said to her that we're going to call your son Jimmy because Dimitri is a little bit too ethnic. It'll help, Jimmy will help him fit in, and it's easier for us to pronounce.
It's insane, right? Isn't it? This is crazy.
So, you know, we grew up in a society where people within, let's call it, leadership positions weren't actually good leaders themselves, didn't practice that balance and harmony between those extremes that we've just talked about. And I think it actually this change needs to happen through systems, through our education system. It needs to happen through constitutional change, of course, as we're seeing here in Australia, to support the surfacing and the elevation of good leadership, good trouble, and good voices, and necessary voices that need to be heard and listened to within our culture and society.
Yeah, so, you know, that's, you kind of reflect on you know, the 80s and some of those moments where we had those sort of institutional leaders across, you know, all walks of life, whether they're education, political, and you think, wow, what the hell were they thinking back then, making those kinds of comments? It's almost insane.
I can't believe the era we grew up in. I can't believe what was acceptable, to be honest with you. Like, the shit we saw on TV, I can't believe it. The era we grew up in, it was fucking shameful.
It's pretty crazy. And I, you know, when I think about good trouble and leadership and the role of the change agent, and, you know, how do we affect good, strong, impactful change in a world that's in chaos at the moment, I think it's always started with one question, Jim, and we do this with leaders, and you did this with your work, is you sort of say, what is my work? What is the work that I need to do around my own conflict? What am I holding on to? What do I need to let go of? How do I even do deep thinking? Do I create space for that? You sent me that magnificent article the other day, which we should, you know, provide a link to, around leadership and solitude. And it really hit a core tone with me, because we don't get to play the role of the change agent if we're shouting and yelling and we haven't done our own work. Because whatever conflict we're feeling, whatever turmoil we're feeling, is going to come straight out of our throats and our mouth. And you can tell when people are doing that. You can tell on Twitter, you can tell in forums and content when they haven't done any work. And so if they're feeling angry or shit or happy or sad, they're just going to spew words. And I don't care what part of the political continuum you're on. It's the same stuff. Mm. It's going to come out without consideration, without intention, without compassion, and without wisdom. Mm. And I've certainly been there, and I've certainly had that heightened reactivity. I'm not even going to think about what I'm going to say. I'm just going to feel like angry or sad or agitated, and I'm just going to spew words out of my mouth without intention. And it's okay to, but guys like John Lewis and Martin Luther King, they are purposeful with their anger. Mm. They're intentional. Mm. Yeah, it doesn't feel like a lack of control or an inner conflict that they haven't resolved. And I think that sort of work of leadership is so important, that we're providing spaces for leaders and people across organisations and across society to sort of invite them to think about, well, what's your work, mate? How are you going to do the work, and how are you going to sit down and do that work? Have you actually sat down and done the art of deep awareness, breathing, contemplation, reflection. You do any breathing? Do you do anything remotely to quiet time and solitude? Because when you don't do that, stuff's going to come up that's going to be quite polarizing
and visceral.
Well, it's visceral, and it's just going to create more cracks and division. So that's, I don't know, I just think that's the ultimate role of the change agent. They've got to work on themselves before they get to turn up and talk to the world.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the underlying ideas here is this sense of creating a sense of belonging within communities, society, but also within the organization. So people feel that safety and feel that presence and sense of belonging. They actually feel it, they sense it, they can see it, they can experience it. And that's really difficult. That's really difficult. But that's the work I think good leaders need to do. They need to ensure that spaces allow people to feel that sense that they belong here, that they can see themselves in the senior people within the organization. They can see themselves represented accurately and respectfully when the organization turns up or shows up. That sense of belonging is critical, I think, to allow people to then elevate and allow them to flourish within an organization and be those change agents, those good leaders. The sense of authenticity and belonging is sorely missed in a lot of areas.
Look, it's massive. Yeah, if we sort of reflecting on last week's podcast with Jess, there was that beautiful present sense of dialogue. When you've got presence within dialogue and people are connected, they're here, they're looking you in the eye, they're paying you that attention, there's a message there, which is, I actually give a shit about you. You matter. You and I don't have to agree. We can have come from different worlds, but at the end of the day, you actually matter. Now, when you create that cultural safety and you give people permission to drop in and to drop their masks, to drop those facades, to drop the veneer, that's where the magic happens. And that's, I guess, one reason I felt so fueled by our conversation last week. And the next thing I'm always thinking about is how do we create more of that? Mm. Surely we want more of that connectivity. So what is that one step in through our communities? Where how do we turn up with that presence down the street? How do we turn up with that presence with our neighbour?
Yeah.
And what does that conversation look like? Because that's the healing, that's the fuel. Yeah.
There's a great arts initiative in the suburb of Footscray, which is where I grew up and where I was born, actually. And there's a great arts initiative there by a group of young third generation Greek Australian boys. And what they've done is they've gone around and they've looked at the first wave of Greek Australian migrants that came into Footscray and settled into Footscray, people like my father, right, in the late 60s. And they've gone around and interviewed them and photographed them, and they've told their story so that it's not forgotten. So those videos have been made available through various channels. Then what they've done is they've commissioned an artist to paint an enormous mural in a very present area of Footscray to honour those people and what they did to inject culture within the suburb. It's called the Hidden Hellenism Project.
Wow.
And it was launched on the weekend. It's such an amazing initiative to do just that, to create a sense of authenticity and belonging in a space, in a community, where people can see that not only that one aspect of the community can feel like they belong, but people can see that there's an avenue here for even more belonging for other cultures and other migrants who come and settle into this space. And other people even just move into the space,
yeah,
right,
wow,
from another suburb. Just feel that sense of connection to the people that were there before them, that created a richness and vibrancy in a space. The Hidden Hellenism Project launched last week, I think, and if you get a chance to drive through, you should see it. It's an enormous mural. It's fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah. I love those streets at Footscray, Jim. I spent a lot of time growing up there.
Yeah,
and I can't imagine how that's going to play out. That's going to be so good.
It's wonderful. And, you know, that's the difference between saying and doing.
Yes.
Right. These kids, they're still in university. One's doing medicine, the other one I think is doing law. I mean, geez. All right. And they've got time to do this.
Yeah.
I think it's remarkable.
Yeah.
They've got time to do this. I think it's impactful, remarkable. And they would have had to push to get that funded.
Yes.
To raise not only just awareness, but just to raise money, enough money to just make that happen, just to honour those people that came before them. That I think is really powerful.
And do you think, I mean, the fact that you're generating this in a conversation, can you imagine the conversations that are going to get generated around that project? And that's where culture change happens, through the conversation. It's not some Boston Consulting McKinsey 7S model. It's actually through a conversation.
That's right. It's community leadership, isn't it? And other communities within that area will see the opportunity to put their stamp and to honour their post-war migrants or their recent migrants that have come into that space and create an even greater sense of belonging for others. That ripple effect, I find, is where the power is. It's not just putting up a pretty picture that honours people from 3 decades ago. That's step one. Right? That ripple effect of change that we'll see that unlocks, that's, I think, the powerful thing.
The thing that kind of immediately arises right now for me is we need more of these conversations and not more stuff.
Mm.
We don't need more physical things. We need more conversations. We need more reasons to have meaningful human conversations. That's what's going to heal us, connect us. And we don't need more stuff. We don't need more running to more stuff, do we?
Yeah, I agree. How do you do that in an organization that's in flux, facing change, hundreds of people? Where does it start?
You know, you often think about that sort of, the beautiful quote a little while back, cultures change one conversation at a time. It's that nice, consistent, incremental way of affecting culture through conversation and dialogue. We speak about space. We speak about presence. We speak about people being connected, and we speak about people doing their own work, so how they turn up. And it's not just that they're going to be fully present and engaged all the time. That's just not realistic. We're human beings, but we get tired, we get grumpy, we get overwhelmed. That's okay. That's part of the messiness of being a human being. But if we at least turn up with that intention to practice presence for ourselves and those around us, if we look people in the eye, if we give them the time, if we let them know that they actually matter, not tell them but through that they matter, but do it through our actions, then that has such a ripple effect. And you may not be able to change the whole organisational culture, but you can certainly affect and impact those that come and connect with you. So when you do that, when you give that gift to others, what do you think they're going to do to that next person? Or vice versa, if you shut people down or you tell them that they don't really matter through the way you engage with them, when you're perpetuating, you're part of the problem, aren't you? You can't whine about C-suite CEOs doing that because you're part of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't flip-flop because people will see that.
So it's got to be authentic.
It's got to be authentic.
It's got to be something that you care about.
Yeah.
And people will believe you. Yeah. They'll sort of get that presence.
Absolutely. And somewhere in there, you've got to find the solitude. You've got to be able to walk away and say, this is now my time, right? Because maybe that's where you find the harmony. Maybe that's where you find that balance that we were talking about, where I was asking, how do you do it? Maybe that's where it is.
Yeah, Jim, the space for solitude, you know, your body will always tell you when you're disconnected and you're so absorbed in the chaos, the things going on around you or difficult conversations or just the intensity of any relationships that you have in your world, whether they're personal or professional.
So we've got a lineup of amazing people that we're going to bring into this space. Quite a few have said yes. I'm really excited about them. Each one of them are just these remarkable people. And we'll continue doing our one-on-ones, you and I, which is the real beauty of this podcast. But I'm really excited about this. I'm really excited about us 2 years later coming back. And I was looking at the dates. I can't believe 2 years went
just
like this,
that,
right?
Bang.
We're coming back into this podcast journey of ours. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, there's some really cool people that are willing to come on. I think I'm just excited to sort of see where it's going to end up, and just letting it go where it needs to go,
if anywhere.
And mate, and you're off on Sunday, and you're leaving us, Jim.
I am not going far. Don't worry, 10 hours behind.
10 hours behind. But look, I can't wait to hear your stories and safe travels there, man.
Thank you.
It's going to be an amazing journey.
Thanks,
from what
Dave.
It sounds like.
Thanks, mate. I'll see you soon.
See you soon. Hi, I'm Damien Carolla, and I've been playing in the human development and high performance space for a few decades now,
and run a coaching practice called Mentor Hub. I work with entrepreneurs, athletes, CEOs, and leaders on the topics of change and transformation, leadership, and culture. What's central to my work is that we create safe, empowering, and inspiring spaces for people to realize their potential. And I work with leaders and organizations across a diverse range of sectors, from building, construction, and technology, through to retail and social enterprise. Lately, I've been collaborating with leaders and teams around the topics of mental resilience and agility. We use a lot of storytelling, open dialogue to help leaders and teams redefine what it means to build resilience and flexibility across a chaotic world. I believe in the power of the human condition and that each one of us is here to realize our full potential. And so Fearless Conversations is a series of dialogue sessions where we get to peel back the layers and really explore the things that matter most. It's a conversation between two good friends that care deeply about people and the worlds in which we live.
Hi, I'm Jim Antonopoulos. Actually, my name is Dimitri, but we'll get into that another time. I'm the Managing Director of Strategy and Transformation Consultancy, Tank. We're based in Melbourne, Australia. As one of Australia's earliest B Corp accredited businesses, we work across a number of impact areas on change and transformation programs, empowering young women, sustainable and affordable housing, financial literacy for underrepresented communities, accessible quality education, meaningful workplace cultures, and cultural diversity and inclusion being some of them. My team and I bring empathy and meaning to impact organizations, and we believe that every business and every leader can be good, ethical, and purpose-driven, or at least they should be. Most importantly, I'm a father of three amazing people, and I work tirelessly to leave the world in a better place for them. Our podcast continues thanks to your support. Listeners like you who have shared our podcast with your networks on LinkedIn and other social platforms have meant the world to us. It has motivated us to continue doing what we do. If you would like to support this podcast and keep it free of advertising forever, please head on over to marchfirst.com.au/podcast, where you can donate to support our show and share the link with your friends and networks.